And that blank is justification. You're trying to justify. That's what an apology is. You're justifying your position on something. Therefore, to apologize simply means to explain. It's just an explanation. To apologize simply means to explain your reasoning for coming to whatever conclusions are in question. Originally, an apology had absolutely nothing. Put nothing in that blank. How do you put nothing in that blank? Nothing to do with having done wrong or need to say that you are sorry. In fact, it's the opposite. Since an apology is an explanation, we're back to the idea of explaining. An apology is an explanation justifying why you believe what you believe. So let's talk about this for a little bit. When I first heard of Christian apologetics, I immediately felt bad because I thought somebody wants to say they're sorry for being a Christian, because that's how I'd always used the word apology up until that point. That's what an apology is. It's saying, I'm sorry, I did something wrong. But that's not the original meaning of the word apology. The original meaning meant to explain, to justify. So that's what apologetics is. Sometimes you'll see it called Christian evidences. And that's another good thing to call it, because we are looking at those things that explain or that are evidence for Christianity, for belief in there being a God in the first place, and that the God of the Bible is the true and living God and the only God, and that the Bible is his word, and that he created everything as he said in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. All of these things are involved in apologetics. So let's look at the third paragraph. Apologetics is an excellent tool to show how rational it is to believe in God. Belief in God is a rational thing. It's not irrational. A lot of folks will accuse Christians of being irrational. Oh, you believe in the... And somebody must have said this, and then other people just cabbage onto it. The flying spaghetti monster in the sky. Anybody ever heard that? Okay, that's what's thrown around these days. And so when you hear that, you know, that's just somebody who's heard somebody else say it. It's not based on any real research. It's kind of like when somebody says, oh, the Bible's been rewritten so many times. You know, when you hear someone say that they know absolutely nothing. They have done absolutely zero research on how we have come to have the Bible today. They're just parroting, repeating, as a parrot does, what somebody else has said. They've heard that. They like that. And so they just say it. Oh, the Bible's been rewritten so many times you can't trust what it says. That's so patently false. It's ridiculous. But sometimes that's what folks do. And we need to guard ourselves against doing the same thing. Just repeating something because somebody else said it was so. One of the things that has frustrated me being a preacher is somebody coming to me and saying, hey, my friend said so-and-so. What do we believe about that? And I say, well, I don't know. What do you believe about it? Because it's like there's some kind of a book that says, here's everything we believe. Well, there is. Guess what that book is? It's called the Bible. But you don't find out what you believe by asking somebody else to tell you. Tell me what I believe. Now, if they were to ask me, now this is what my friend said. What does the Bible say about that? Well, that's a completely different question. But to ask what do we believe is an admission that you don't know and you want somebody to tell you what to believe. And that's the wrong way to go about this. Seeking out God is a very personal thing and should be done on a personal level. We learn from each other, but your faith has to be your own. All right, let's see. Apologetics is an excellent tool to show how rational it is to believe in God, that the Bible is his word, and that the Bible, that what the Bible tells us is true. What the Bible tells us is true. Another word would be accurate. And I didn't put it in the worksheet, but you might make a note. It's always accurate in its context. in its context. Some people will point at passages, pull them out of context. Oh, the Bible says this. Jesus said, cut off your right hand or pluck out your eye. No. It's accurate in its context. Always read things in their context. Still in that third paragraph, apologetics must be valuable because the Holy Spirit sprinkled apologies throughout God's word. Here are a few examples. And then there's a quick little note there. The double F simply means in following verses. Psalm 19, verse 1 and following. The heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. David is telling the reader to, what would you put there? To examine. Examine the heavens to study the environment to learn lessons about our Creator that may not be taught with the written word. What does that mean? Lessons about our Creator that may not be taught with the written word. I'm sorry? Oh, by the way, do we have somebody to carry the microphones in here this morning? We need a volunteer because Phil is teaching class. If somebody wants to go get Phil and pull him out of his class and bring him over here. But we need somebody to run back and forth with a microphone. So who had a comment that needs the microphone?
How great, how awesome, how indecipherable is his ability.
How can you appropriately describe a sunset with words? Describing it can be done, but the description will not have the same impact as just standing there with your jaw agape looking, going, wow. And how many times, I'll just ask, I know this is a subjective question, but how many times have you looked at a sunset or a sunrise and wondered to yourself, how can people say there is no God? And then you think about how regular it is. Every morning, sun comes up. Actually, the sun doesn't come up. The earth rolls. But as I have said before, it's not nearly as romantic to say, did you see that earth roll this morning? And it's another thing to consider that the sun is rising all the time. It's just moving over the surface of the earth. And the sun is setting on the opposite side of the earth all the time. The sun is setting, the sun is rising constantly. It's been doing that, we know, for 6,000 years. And it's just as regular as it could be. How is that regulated by nature? It would seem, it's rational to believe, it's regulated by something greater than nature. And so many other things like that. So we're talking about looking at the heavens and the expanse, the firmament, examining and studying these things to learn about our Creator. Psalm 139, verse 14 and following. I'll give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. Just a portion, just one verse out of this text. The reader is being told to simply look at your own body. Look at your body to be amazed at how intricately and expertly you have been formed. You can see, move. What else can you do? This is the real getter right here. You can think. You can think. You can ponder. You can wonder. You can imagine. Animals don't do that. You might get tired of hearing me say it, but all the years I've spent outdoors, I've never once seen an animal sitting on a tree limb watching the sun go down in awe. They just don't do it. They don't appreciate art. They don't appreciate beauty the way we do. They don't think about things. An animal will find another dead animal. I think I told you this story. There were 5 or 6 turkeys, and I shot the last one with my bow, and she fell off into a dry creek bed and shook, and she was gone. And 3 of her turkey friends came back and looked at her, kind of like to say, hey, Frieda, aren't you coming? Well, okay, let's go. And they just, no mourning, no ringing of the wings. Nobody said any words over her. They just went on. They're animals. That's what animals do. People are different, and we need to notice the differences and appreciate those. You can see, move, think, and feel with your body and your emotions. You are the most complex creation in the universe, and God made you. There is nothing accidental about your design or your existence, as evolution would have us to believe. You are here on, what would you put in that blank? You're here on purpose. You're here on purpose. Nothing accidental about you. Now, what might people who do not believe in God say about these statements about the physical body and purpose and design and all that? I'm sorry? Free will, okay, yeah, we've got free will. That's a great argument for the existence of God, because we can make decisions. And in making decisions, we come to conclusions that we think are morally right or morally wrong. But how can anything be morally right or morally wrong if there is no God? You can only choose what's right or what's wrong morally based on there being some kind of a law. And in order for there to be a law, there has to be a lawgiver. And so we've got that. But a lot of folks, when you talk about this, they'll say, well, things aren't perfect, though. People get cancer, and people die, and children get diseases, and your body doesn't always do what it's supposed to do. Do you have an apology for that? Sin. That's exactly it. It goes right back to Genesis chapter 3. And it's amazing, when we've got questions about why things are the way they are in life, there's always something in the Bible that will help us to understand it. An explanation, if you will. An apology, if you will. There is an explanation in Genesis chapter 3 that sin entered into the world and humankind fell. And not only did humankind fall, the entire creation fell. What is it that Paul writes in Romans chapter 8? Let's go there. Romans chapter 8, because this argument for design is a very powerful argument, but some will say, well, it's poorly designed because of all the trouble there is in the world, and the things don't always work right, and there are asteroids banging into planets and meteorites falling down to the earth. Do you know the difference between a meteor and a meteorite? A meteorite comes right on down. That's how I remember it. You pick your own way, but that's how I do it. Romans chapter 8, verse 18, Paul says, I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that's to be revealed in us. The anxious longing of the creation. The anxious longing of what? Of the creation. He speaks as if to personify the created universe. The anxious longing of the creation waits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself also will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation, what's it doing? It's groaning. The whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. And not only this, but also we ourselves, having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. If you don't understand that, just watch the news. And when you see what's happening in the news, what's being reported is happening in our state, in our localities, in our country, in the world, you will groan, and it's groan worthy. The creation is fallen, and God is trying to bring us back to him. All right, Romans chapter 1, verse 20. Since the creation of this world, the invisible attributes of his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. In other words, atheism has no foundation, in logic or reason, as the evidence against it abounds all around us. God's eternal power and divine nature are clearly seen, being expressed in all we see. Everything we see tells us that there is a creator. And when you think about it, you can't get away from the idea that he is eternal. The universe exists. How does it exist? There's no explanation for the existence of the universe within the universe. I know you hear theories and you hear ideas, but that's all those things are. They're just ideas and theories, what people think might have happened. But science doesn't back any of that up in reality. Now, they will tell you that it does. You'll get that impression. But the science is not behind an eternal universe. There's a thing called entropy. Entropy simply means that everything's wearing out and running down. And if you don't believe that, look in the mirror. I'm sorry, it's just the way it is. Hebrews chapter 3. By the way, just to remind you what we're doing, we're looking at explanations that God has put into the scriptures that we would call perhaps apologies or evidences. He's just drawing them out, making them clear for us. Hebrews chapter 3, verses 3 through 4. For he has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses, by just so much as the builder of the house has more honor than the house. For every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. Now the topic here is not apologetics in Hebrews chapter 3. But he touches on apologetics to make his point. And it's a very simple statement. Who would argue with it? The builder, or every house has a builder. Somebody built it. Nobody drives by a house and thinks, oh, that's just an accident that happened there. I wonder how that got there. Well, somebody built it. Nobody would ever question that. If every house, back to the statement, if every house is built by someone, then what of the builder? What of the builder? Where did the builder come from? The person. The constructor. Is that even a word? No one would claim a house to be an accident of nature. How then could the builder of the house be an accident? This writer points us to the logic and reason of causality. I would spell it for you, but if you just look at the beginning of the next sentence, you'll see it. Causality. He's pointing us to causality. Causality, simply put, means that everything that exists must have a cause. Every mother knows this. You'll hear a mom asking, who put this here? Why is this mess in the floor? You're going to put your toys away? There's a cause for everything, and mothers know all about causes and who caused almost all of them. Causality, simply put, means that everything that exists must have a cause. The cause is necessarily, what would you put in that blank? Greater. The cause is greater than what was caused to be. You see a house. What's greater, the house or the guy that built the house? Well, duh. Everybody knows any human being is more important and more valuable than a house. All right, back page. We're actually to the back page. We're going to look at a video. If we've got time, I think we've got time to do it. The video is 11 years old. How many of you have heard of Prager University? It's an online thing. A fellow by the name of Dennis Prager, who happens to be Jewish, but he's conservative. He brings together people who have conservative thoughts, and they make these videos that are anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes long about conservative things and ideals and teachings. And this particular guy, Frank Pastore, used to be an atheist, and then some of his friends challenged him, and he started looking into Christianity in order to disprove it, to show how stupid it was, and then found out that, oh, this is all legit. And this is kind of his story in a nutshell. But he's come up with this idea that there couldn't have been just one Big Bang. There had to be at least four Big Bangs, and that's what this video will show. We'll go through and fill out some of the blanks after we watch the video. Hal, you got it all queued up for us?
You know, for 27 years, I was an atheist. I thought anyone who believed in a god or gods was, well, stupid or uneducated, naive, gullible, or just into the gig for money, sex, and power. I mean, after all, everyone knows that religion is just a psychological crutch for intellectual weaklings, right? So, what changed my mind? Well, look, I tell the whole story in my book, Shattered, but for our purposes here on Prager University, I was simply challenged by my Christian teammates on the Cincinnati Reds to read some religious books, critique them, and then share with the guys where the authors were wrong and why atheism is the only real and true outlook for anyone not deceived by fantasy, fiction, or mythology. I mean, for someone who wants to base their beliefs and values upon evidence and argument, not emotion and tradition. Now, look, simply put, I set out to disprove theism, which I didn't think would take very long. But I ran into some difficulties along the way. Difficulties like Aristotle, Augustine, Aquinas. I mean, in simple terms, I was confronted with the awareness that there are really four Big Bangs that have to be accounted for, not just one. I had never really even considered that before. I mean, we're all familiar with the first Big Bang, right? It's usually the answer given to the question, why is there something rather than nothing? It's the idea that there was nothing, it popped, and boom, there's something. I mean, that time, matter, and space all came into existence in some great cosmological flash about 16 billion years ago. There was no gradual development, no transitional forms, just a binary flip, a metaphysical, now you don't see it, and now you do. Fine, I want to follow the evidence wherever it leads. However, astrophysicists tell us that this first Big Bang yielded only a handful of fundamental elements and that it would take billions and billions of years for the nuclear furnaces of trillions of stars to yield the 118 elements in the periodic table. But the first theoretical cosmological Big Bang, well, it only yields matter and energy. It doesn't even begin to address the origin of life. So how do you get life from non-life? How did abiogenesis occur? I mean, the notion that something can come from nothing. Where's the evidence? Well, you're going to need another something from nothing leap of faith, some kind of biological second Big Bang. For all the mind-blowing advancements we've made in physics, biology, and chemistry in just the past 100 years, we're still no closer to making it happen. We don't have a clue. The closer we look, the wider the chasm. I mean, sure, we've learned a lot about how to manipulate life forms, how to add and subtract DNA material, even map the human genome, but we have no idea how to literally create life from dead stuff. Now, look, at this point, we still only have physics, chemistry, and some basic biology, or matter, energy, and simple life, if you will, but we still don't have a way to account for the great diversity of life forms. I mean, the huge differences between bacteria, plants, and animals. Nor do we have a way to account for the differences between man and animal. We still don't have an anthropology at this point. So we're going to need a kind of anthropological third Big Bang to account for all this, which, of course, is what Darwin was after in his Descent of Man thesis. Now, look, Darwin answered a lot of questions, but he could never answer the core question. How did evolution begin? But hey, we're still not done describing the world that is all around us. A final Big Bang is going to be required to explain how a mechanistic animal brain can become a self-reflective human mind. Even the lowest life forms have brains and central nervous systems. I mean, how does something like that become the mind of a Michelangelo, a Shakespeare, a Beethoven? Come on, animals don't do art, and they don't appreciate beauty. But the problem is even more basic than that. How do you account for free will and introspection, let alone man's pressing existential drive to ask why? Well, we're going to need some kind of psychological fourth Big Bang to account for man's moral and aesthetic sense. I mean, his search for meaning, significance, and purpose. and of course his appreciation for the true, the good, and the beautiful. And again, you must understand these problems require bangs. I mean, sudden binary pops into existence, since there's no evidence for any gradual development in any of these. So I, like you, have a choice. It's either faith in these four big bangs of somethings from nothings to account for what we see all around us, or faith in some kind of creator God behind it all. So next time someone asks you, hey, what about the Big Bang? Make sure you ask them, which one? The cosmological, biological, anthropological, or psychological? I'm Frank Pastore for Prager University.
Do you ever think you'd learn something like that from a baseball player? In a brief video entitled, Does God Exist? Four New Arguments by Frank Pastore, the author asks, which Big Bang? Big Bang number one. This is the accepted Big Bang, which says that the blank universe, what would you put in that one? Physical, the physical universe. There is a physical universe. It's our planet and our solar system with all the planets and the sun, but it's also the galaxy we're in. How many galaxies are there in the universe? Billions. Billions. It's unbelievable. Anyway, the physical universe with matter, space, and time came into existence at one specific point, and this is a cosmological belief that some folks have relating to the origin and development of the universe. And then here's a note. There is no known physical mechanism by which this could have happened, and that simply means science can't tell us how this happened. We trust science, but what is science? All the word science means is knowledge. Science is knowledge. What do we know? Well, do we know everything? Obviously not. That's why science still exists. We don't know everything. We're still searching. We're still learning, which is exactly what we're supposed to be doing, by the way. In Genesis chapter 1, what did God give man but dominion over the creation? Have dominion, God said to the man and the woman. In other words, this is your place to live. Go forth and cut down some trees, build a dam, whatever it is that you can do to use the resources in the creation in a good way, do that. God started his book saying that he created. That's the first verse. In the beginning, God created, and he made people in his image, and we are to create also. But think of your Father, you're in heaven, when you are creating, that this is what he's made you to do. This is what he did, and this is what he made us to do, to use the universe that he has given us. But science, no matter how far we pursue it, can't tell us how the universe came into being. We are left reliant on God for that, and he has done it. Big Bang number two. Somehow, what came into existence? Life. Life came into existence. How'd that happen? The claim is that it was all by accident, and this would have been the biological Big Bang relating to living organisms. Another note, there is no known physical mechanism by which this could have happened. How long have men been in laboratories trying to create life, and they've not been able to do it? We don't even know what it is. We don't have a satisfactory explanation for exactly what life is. What's the song we sing? It says God holds the germ within his hand. And he's not talking about the germ like you think of, oh, there's germs everywhere. No, he's talking about the germ of life, how a seed can germinate and become something that is alive. It has that power in it. Where does that come from? We don't know. Seeds all over the place. Cut into them, we look at them, we watch them, we see what they do. We still can't figure out what is life. But some folks think it happened by accident. And that just doesn't seem to make sense. Big bang number three. This would be when humans came into existence. As they are distinguished from plants and animals, we would call this the anthropological Big Bang, relating to the study of humankind. Guess what the note says under that? There is no known physical mechanism by which this could have happened. By the way, I don't know if you caught it, but apparently Frank Pastore still believes in evolution to some degree. I don't. I believe the biblical record tells us exactly how it happened. God took dirt and he formed a man from the dirt, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. There was no progression from any lower life form up into humanity. Think about it now. If there was, if that's how God did it, if he started with a lower life form and then through that life form changed it and changed it and changed it, that's what evolution is, it's changed, brought man into existence, then at some point something that was not human gave birth to the first humans. And that doesn't sound like anything what the Bible said. So it seems like it would still be happening today, doesn't it? Yeah, good point. Big bang number four, the human what came into existence? The mind, the human mind came into existence. We are sentient, self-reflective beings as opposed to animals. So the fourth is the psychological Big Bang related to the mental and emotional state of a person. Guess what the note says? No explanation for that. How do you explain the fact that you're conscious? How do you explain the fact that you can think, you can have ideas, you can hold ideas, and you can remember things? And isn't that the saddest thing that can happen to us is when we get to the point where we get dementia, we get Alzheimer's, we get the disease that relieves us of our memory, and because we no longer have our memory, our identity goes along with that. Have I been standing close enough to this that you could hear me? All right. Sometimes it sounds a little different down here. But the human mind cannot be explained. Consciousness cannot be explained. It's amazing. It's astounding. But I'm glad we've got them, aren't you? God had already said that, bro. That's just a funny way for me to say because of what's coming next. In 1862, a fellow by the name of Herbert Spencer, in a work entitled First Principles, identified time, force, action, space, and matter as ultimate scientific ideas. He referred to these as the five manifestations of natural phenomena. Long before Mr. Spencer, God told Moses to write down this. In the beginning, what would that be in Mr. Spencer's term? That's time. In the beginning, time. God, what would that be? There's your force. Created, what's that? That's action. The heavens, space, and the earth. That's matter. Isn't that amazing? Mr. Spencer was onto a profound discovery. The only issue was it had been written down thousands of years before. Apparently just missed it. Do I have the last page? Well, that is the last page. All right. There was more. What happened to the more? Oh, well. It's gone. All right. Anybody got any observations to make about this material or this class? What is something of interest that you would like to look at in the weeks to come? Anything you have in mind that you'd like to talk about, like to discuss regarding apologetics? I do plan, we'll talk about dinosaurs. Where did dinosaurs come from? Why are they extinct? All those kinds of things. And did dinosaurs coexist with men? That's the big question. And the obvious evidence is that they very much did exist with men. There are legends of dragons where? Everywhere. In every human culture, there are legends of dragons. Was there a universal flood? There was a universal flood. The evidence for that is everywhere. When you look all over the surface of the earth, everywhere on the earth, even Antarctica, we are looking at waterborne sediment that would only happen if there was some kind of a flood. What about the missing links? Are you aware that almost every missing link that science would point us to, I say science, for lack of a better way to describe it, everyone is a fake or it falls through. It's not really what has been claimed. And I don't mean to demean science, but here's the way science gets done. People have to have funding for their research. And if you're being funded to do research, what do you want to do to justify the funding? You want to come up with something. You want to develop something. Or in this case, you want to find something. You want to find some fossils that provide evidence for whatever you're looking to find evidence for. And so that sort of throws a wrench into the works and keeps things sometimes, I believe, from being objective. And here's another thing that you'll see when you are looking at magazines and newspaper articles about these things. You'll see a headline. I just saw one last week. I should have saved it and put it on a PowerPoint for you to see. Now, this changes everything. This changes everything. What we thought is now being thrown out the window because this discovery changes everything. You see that all the time in all kinds of articles. Well, if how could it change everything if we knew? But this is what you see from time to time. You don't see that in the Bible. It's been around for a long time, and it stood the test of time, and what it says has been shown to be true. So, was that a hand? No, okay. Don't scratch your face. I think you're wanting to make a comment. So, another thing we'll look at is, how many of you remember a lesson on the Chinese language? Anybody? Okay, a couple of you remember the lesson on the Chinese characters. I was astounded when I first saw this many years ago, that the Chinese characters in the Chinese language, you know, those beautiful things that they make to write and to speak, those tell the biblical story of creation and the flood and of Babylon. And we'll look at those again to see how they are explaining that the scriptures are the truth of the Word of God. We'll also look at prophecies, messianic prophecies. Remember when Apollos proved that Jesus was the Christ? How did he prove that Jesus was the Christ? He did it through the scriptures, and the only scriptures he would have had available to him would have been the Old Testament. So that tells us, just look at the Old Testament. When you see what it says about the coming Christ, that the one who has come is Jesus, and he is the Christ because he fulfills all of the prophecies. All of these things are evidences. They are apologies, if you will, explanations for why it's rational to believe not just in the Bible, but to believe the Bible, that it is the Word of God and what it teaches us is the truth. These are some of the things we'll be looking at, Lord willing, in the weeks to come. And if you got any comments or observations about these, let me know. Anything in particular you want to look at, let me know and we'll try to get to that. But that's our class for this morning. I hope it's been beneficial to you. Lord bless you, and let's get ready for worship.